Hey there, and welcome to Speak Easy with Kendra Fisher. Join me each week as my guests and I take a deep dive into all of the conversations we've been taught are better left unsaid. No more silence, no more hiding. This is a safe space where anything goes. Today on Speak Easy, we're speaking with Luke Zerotto, alcohol-free life coach and marathon runner. Good day, everybody. I am here with Luke. We were just having this conversation. I said I was going to mess it up. There's a little French Canadian here, and I'm going to say it for me. Let me hear it.
It's Luc. Yeah, we say Luc.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. But
I love
everyone just calls me Luke. Luke. I like to say, you know, it's funny. My daughter started calling me Luc recently, and it's pretty funny hearing her say that.
Now that
she's in French school.
How old?
She just turned 5 in September.
Even better. I so wish she was there right now so I could hear it, because that would make my heart smile. I have no doubt. And she could teach me. Anyways, my friend, thank you so very kindly for joining me here today. I have been excited to connect with you for how long now? I think we've been,
it's been a while. It's been some time. I know. I'm really happy that we're doing this finally. So thanks for having me.
I want to dive right in. I want to know everything about you, because I've caught tidbits. I follow you online. And I mean, obviously, I think we have a lot in common in terms of perhaps how we manage some things and some of our life journey. So let's start from the beginning. If you were going to give that like quick pitch, tell us about you.
Okay. So maybe I'll start with where I'm at now. So I'm coming on 8 years of sobriety.
Congratulations, my friend. That's amazing.
It's been a journey. You know, I identify as a sober dad, sober husband, and sober marathoner.
I've amazing.
Really undergone, you know, huge transformation, and that's amazing. The identity that I'm proud of. It's taken time. It's been a journey, like I said, to get to where I am. So stepping back a bit, it's I grew up in just outside of Toronto.
Okay.
And I had a great family, mom and dad, really supportive. But, I guess being French Canadian, half French Canadian and half Italian, there was a lot of socializing with my family, a lot of drinking. It was very much normalized, I'd say.
Yeah.
So I grew up with that. I mean, my dad struggled actually with alcohol. We never talked about it as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Being the eldest of two. I used to cry a lot as a kid, like when my parents would fight. So it really ate me up inside. But yeah, just growing up, I had a great life, a lot of opportunities, and I was kind of in denial a bit with my struggle with alcohol.
Yeah.
And it kind of got worse in university and after school when I was living on my own. And then it was just like a struggle where I didn't want to look, I never wanted to be sober ever. Like the fact that I can just say I'm coming on 8 years is pretty wild, because I never wanted to be sober. Like I thought sobriety was for people not like me. I was a bit...
Say more about that. What do you mean not like me?
See, that's the thing, because I was fooling myself, I took care of myself in the sense that like I was in the gym a lot. Like I would still find a way to like work out. I had a steady job, right? Mm-hmm. I had my own place. I had a car. So it's like, it's not that bad, because I'm able to,
function,
get through the day and show up when it's kind of needed. Like I can fake it kind of, you know what I mean? And I was
I do.
Okay. Like that's life. Like you're supposed to, it's okay to feel like shit. It's like, it's okay to like regret things. And like, that's what it is. You work hard and you play harder. And that was like my whole, that was my life, right?
It sounds like maybe the justification is you've earned the right to play hard because you're still functioning in life.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
And it's, I'm at this like place in my life right now where I'm just so introspectively inside myself and like reevaluating everything. And I just love connecting with people and hearing their stories and their journeys, especially with things that I can connect with. One of those things being what you just said around, I was always able to force myself to go to the gym and take care of myself. And knowing now what you know, how much of going to the gym is taking care of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. it's not, there's so much more to it, right? It's you know, like the physical and the mental is, I mean, I'm a big believer in mind and body are connected. Absolutely. But just the freedom that I have now by not struggling with alcohol and drugs is completely transformed my life. It's changed my life big time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, fool anybody that I have it all figured out, right? Like I definitely don't. I still have things I'm working on, and my wife and I still, you know, we still fight, and sometimes I'm impatient. I'm not perfect. Like, and that's the thing that I really want to be careful, not careful, but like really clear about is that, yeah, I'm online and I'm sharing this sobriety story, but I really catch myself like be real. Like, how is it? Like, it's not perfect, but I'll tell you, my lows aren't as low. And my highs aren't as high, but you know what? I just turned 40 this year, right? Yeah. I'm a dad. Like, I want to be like more consistent in my life.
Yeah.
And that's, you know,
I think that's huge. I think consistency is something that everybody, especially on a journey where you've chosen to share the vulnerability of the struggles you have in your life. I think it's this like balance. And I don't know about you, but I know for myself, I often find myself trying to portray the best version. And it's really easy to kind of step out there and say, like, hey, yeah, like these are all the things I'm doing right. But behind the scenes, I mean, we have to be honest. There's still a lot of things we could be doing a lot better.
Big time.
So
big time.
So go back for a second. So university, what were your plans? What were your dreams? I mean, you went to school. What did you go to school for?
Yeah. So I went to school for, I took French and sociology.
Okay. And what was your hope? What were you going to use these for?
My hope, Kendra, I wanted to play hockey for a living. Yeah. Like that was my dream. You know, I was on skates at two years old. You know, hockey was my life for, you know, 15, 16, 17 years.
Yeah.
Didn't go as planned. I mean, a part of that was I just probably wasn't good enough. That's the fact.
Okay.
But I was also like, I also had a lot of like good natural talent. Like, despite being, you know, short, I'm not a big guy, but I was a good hockey
player. Look 6 feet tall to me.
Yeah, in the camera, exactly. maybe in real life, I'm pretty short. But that's kind of like where I think a bit of my redemption with this whole, I'm sure we'll get into the running thing, but it's like, so I wanted to play hockey. So I was never big in school. So what does school look like? I was a party guy, you know, through thick and thin. Like, my identity was life of the party. Like, hang around Luke, he'll get the party going. It'll be a
read,
fun.
Read we'll the fun. Yearbook. Read the yearbook. Yeah. There it is.
That's it. Hashtag. University was like, I went to Wilfrid Laurier in Waterloo. Great school. But I party a lot. Like, you know, pretty much like Wednesday to Sunday night would be a big party. Monday, Tuesday, probably Monday recovery. Or like, I was going out like probably 5-6 days a week, easily. Yeah.
Which is easy to do when you get away to school and all of a sudden you get the autonomy and freedom to manage yourself. And like you said, I mean, you were functioning, you were taking care of yourself. So you've got permission.
Yeah. And, you know, I knew that it was like, it wasn't great because I would, you know, I had a steady girlfriend in university. And then after school, we ended up buying a place. And so we moved, you know, just the two of us. And then quickly after that, maybe 6 months of living together, just the two of us, we ended up breaking up. And a big part of that was my drinking, like, without a doubt.
Yeah.
99% of our fights were about my drinking.
Yeah.
And then I feel like after that, things just escalated for me. Like, they got worse.
Okay.
And by worse, I mean, I started doing drugs.
Okay.
And then once I was introduced to that.
And what drugs, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, cocaine.
Okay. So you can drink longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I just felt, you know, invincible on that. And it was never, like, a few beers were never enough.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, you know, it's not like every time I drank, I needed to do that. But if I had like at least three beers, kind of three was my number. If I had like three and it was like a, you know, I'm having fun. And it was available, I was doing it.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't available. And then I would go look for it.
Okay. Okay. And when you couldn't find it,
or I really started just complicating my life. And yeah. I was working full time, living on my own. And it was yeah. scary because
I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's such a great way of saying that. I started to complicate my life. Oh, I started to complicate my life. I really like that.
Yeah.
Cause it resonates so well for somebody who, has their own sober journey. It's something that that's such a great way of putting it. Sorry to interrupt you. No. That connected.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, look, we love complicating things we love making things way more complicated. You know what I mean? It's like, that's what it was doing. And like I was saying, I knew that something needed to change. I was actually at least somewhat open-minded in the sense that I was, I was accepting the fact that I needed to do something different. And I started actually going to therapy. I started seeing a therapist around my drinking.
Okay. So specifically for the drinking.
Specifically for my drinking.
Okay.
We were working together for, quite some time. And it was always around moderation. It was always like my goal was to be a better drinker. Like, how do I?
So not to stop.
Not to stop. No. Never wanted to stop.
Yeah.
How do I just not, activate that other gear in me that once it's activated, mm-hmm. there's no taming me? How do I not become that person? So how do mm-hmm. I stop at, two drinks? How do I have three drinks and just take it easy? How do I just enjoy the night and not, need to make everything so extra? That was always the goal.
Yeah.
That was always the goal.
And so you get to a point where you've identified that there's a problem, which is obviously as cliche as it sounds, that's always the first step, which is great. Yeah. Arguably, and as somebody who's been sober, this is just a factual statement. As somebody who's been sober for 24 years now. This isn't part of my journey that I ever really get into, which is part of the reason I love having this conversation today, because it's something that, drinking was a symptom of my addiction. Somebody told me recently, and it's true, right? I mean, when it comes to being an addict, quote unquote, you're not an addict because you're drinking. Drinking is just the byproduct. Drugs are just the byproduct. It's just a symptom of what your actual issues are stemming from. And we can be sober from our, I feel like I'm like repeating somebody else's words right now because this is such a recent conversation, but you can be sober from substances and still very much be an addict.
100%. And you know what? I totally agree with that, by the way. Drinking and drugs is for me, it was almost a solution for the problem. Like that's what I would go mm-hmm. to
felt mask. Like, felt like the solution. Felt,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely not the solution, but felt like, felt like the solution. And,
Go ahead. I'm curious, this therapist that you went to and were working with to learn how to be a better drinker. I mean, did they maybe key you into the fact that being a better drinker wasn't going to necessarily help, or we didn't figure it out yet?
To be honest, I ask myself that question a lot. And I think I am a part of that. Absolutely. I think there's an element of me not being 100% honest and open about stuff. So there's definitely I own that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know for the part that I played in it, it never became like, let's consider sobriety. Let's do sobriety. Let's try not drinking.
Yeah.
Because I guess I was good at saying the right thing or whatever it was to just kind of get through. Cause in my heart, I did not want to be sober. I was actually scared shitless of being sober. Oh, so I 100%. Never would have brought that up. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I'm very connected to this conversation right now, because I'm finding myself in a stage in my own life right now where, you know, like you said earlier, we don't always have it figured out. And I don't. Like, I mean, I've been now a professional speaker for 14 years. I was diagnosed with mental illness 24 years ago. I've been sober 24 years, and there are days that it feels like day one. There are days that it's like life sits you down and says, do you know how little control you actually have over the world around you? And I'm in that right now. I am like smack dab in the middle of that right now. And something I've had to consider as recently as this morning, I mean, and I asked you today, and I'll be sharing a post about this later, so I figure I better come clean now. I asked you this morning if it was okay if we push back our recording time to 1 o'clock this afternoon, because I needed to drop my boys off at school, which was indeed true. I was not lying. But the other piece of that was I needed to start with a new therapist this morning. And I received a notification that I could start with this therapist at 9 o'clock this morning. And so it was going to make it impossible then to start our recording time. Right. And I realized I struggle with asking for what I need, but I also know that I can manipulate a therapist better than anybody. And so since my therapist, I lost my therapist 3 years ago. And since then I have made every excuse for not starting therapy again.
Yeah.
Because I already know what they're going to tell me. I already know enough. Right. I can show up to a therapist and be like, look at everything I just got through. How good am I?
Right.
And today, for the first time in 24 years, I sat down with a therapist and said, I need help. And that was the first time in 24 years I've heard those words come out of my mouth.
Wow.
So I have so much appreciation for you sitting there saying and calling yourself on, I knew how to say the right things.
You know, Kendra, I have so much respect. I have a lot of respect for you just following you and knowing your story. But like hearing you just say that right now, like that is very powerful. Someone like you, you know, this mental health advocate, specialist, to be able to be so real and just be like, hey, like I'm working on things myself. I have bad days too. Like, I think more people need to truly hear that, especially from people that I'm sure they look up to, like, wow, Kendra, like doing a lot of good things. Like, I want to be exactly like Kendra. But you know what? Kendra has bad days too. Kendra needs some support too. We all need support. And there's nothing.
And we always need to keep working at it. And that's the thing. I think that's the biggest message. I think that that people like yourself and myself are responsible for, which is, I can share a lot of incredible information that I've gained over the years. I can share all of my experiences and I can teach you what I've been taught or what I've learned, but I also can't ever let myself get to the place of, hey guys, I can carry this and I'm good. Totally. And I'm just going to keep teaching and not learning. And that's what I realized. That's this past week has put me in a position where I was forced to realize again, you know, for the however many hundredth time in my life that I'm not doing enough. And I say that with as much compassion as I can find for myself right now. And I recognize that my life experiences over the past 2 years, more specifically 6 months, have been phenomenally difficult. But that doesn't give me permission to excuse myself from showing up for myself and doing the work. And that's what I've done. I can admit that. I can admit that I've not been doing the right things. And I don't like who I am when I'm not doing the right things. And that is the addict, that's so right? Cool. That is the seeking behaviors that make it possible to feel like we're functioning and and pretend we're still sober. And here I am calling myself on my shit. And thank you for giving me that opportunity, because
I'm so happy.
It takes the connection and the understanding of somebody who truly has space and understands it to really be able to mirror that back on yourself, I think.
I'm really liking this conversation, Kendra, and I'm really proud of you. That takes a lot of guts. And,
I appreciate you.
I'm really happy you shared this. Complacency is the enemy. The moment we think everything is fine, right? I got this. Whatever it is, this it could be anything.
Yeah,
sobriety, whatever's going on in your life. But like you said, it's a work in progress, and it truly is. You know, as cliche as it is, one day at a time. That's what it is.
100%.
One day 100%. At a time. You know, sometimes people ask me, I used to get defensive. They'd ask, so Luke, when are you going to drink again? Right? Like,
I
find out I was,
I still get
when are you going to drink again? Yeah, I still get it, right? But it doesn't bother me as much. But my answer is like, I'll drink when I want to have a drink, I'll have a drink.
Yeah.
But what I always say is, I'm not going to drink today. Like today, I'm not going to drink. I feel good. Yeah. I know I'm not going to drink today. Tomorrow, you know, I'll deal with tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy. Like I know when I started, I was like, does this mean I'm never going to drink again? Like, holy shit, ever?
How overwhelming. It's
like, am I going to be married to one person and just be with that one person forever? Like, oh my God, like how scary. Like who talks like that? Right. Our minds go there, but like, you can't let yourself go to that place.
Yeah.
Because it's depressing. It's sad. I look at it, it's like,
well,
it's sad.
Fear. It's fear. It's allowing yourself to make your world really small in the fear of what you can't control. And I mean, I think that's so much about addictions, right? Is really giving up that control and giving into the fact that you can only put your energy into what you have control over. And you have control over whether or not you drink today. And totally. The best you can do is keep your world in a state that makes it possible for you to be supported and maintain that. But I'm curious, sorry, now that I completely hijacked that for a moment.
No, I'm happy we went there.
We have to. I'm not one of those people who's ever just like, I don't do this because I'm the greatest interviewer in the world. I do this because I love connecting with people and I love learning from other people's experience. I mean, I wrote down that I was complicating my life. I already wrote it down. Like, I'm totally going to use that and I will credit you. Don't worry. But like,
I'm not worried about that.
I love connecting with people in a way that I get to learn. I value so much people offering themselves and their time for that. So how did we get to quote unquote sober? Because it wasn't with a therapist who was helping you to become a better drinker.
No. I think what got me to that point was just, frankly, I was just sick and tired of my own shit. Like I had screwed up. Just the perfect amount, like just enough to be like, hey, I actually don't want this. You know, I was in a steady relationship. My girlfriend, we met in 2011. I was in the peak of my addiction from basically 2011. 2011 to like 2016 when I got sober. So 5 years of our dating, and now she's my wife. And you know,
amazing.
We've been together, you know, since 2011. Married since 2016, so coming on eight years.
That's amazing.
I put her through a lot, right? Because she was with me the entire time, and it was just frankly sick and tired. It wasn't like she gave me an ultimatum. Hey, Luke, you know, I'm gonna leave you if you continue. I never got an ultimatum. I was just frankly sick of my shit. And what happened was a pivotal thing happened.
Okay,
it was right around this time, 2016. It was actually December. Right around the holidays. And I had a night out and it just was another one of those nights, right? A lot of drinking, a lot of drugs, a lot of regret. Woke up, felt like shit, like a lot of other nights. But this night, it just felt different. This morning, I should say, felt different. I was just so tired of it. I was so done. I was done. And what I did was I raced to my computer and I Googled therapist in Toronto. I was determined to find someone else to talk to. And it was an absolute blessing. It was an
amazing,
absolute gift that I was able to connect with this one therapist the same day. Okay.
That's incredible.
I emailed at like, call it 11 a.m.
Yeah.
That afternoon, I was in his office.
Amazing.
Right on Bloor Street.
Amazing.
And I saw him and I was fresh off this, you know, bender, anxiety, everything. And there was no holding me back because I had done the whole, you know, not being truthful up front. Like I gave him all the goods, call it 20 minutes of me just spewing everything out.
Yeah.
And he looks at me right up, like I'm done. And he looks at me, goes, Luke, you can never be drinking again. And I was
good
like,
for him.
What do you mean? Would he like, no. And I was debating him. I was like, I'm French Canadian. I'm Italian. It's my culture. This is my culture. Yeah. Like, no, like you crazy. Debate. Finish the session. I go in my car and I couldn't stop crying. I could not. I was just hysterical. Like I was just nonstop crying because I knew that what he was saying, there was something there, right? There was something that I was like, look, you fucked up just enough. Like listen to this man, listen to him, because no one had ever talked to me like that. My other therapist, nobody, girlfriend, my parents, friend, nobody like looked at me in the eyes and said that to me. I was like, I was blown away. So from that moment on with that
I'm
session,
really happy I didn't do a lot of eye makeup today.
That session changed my life. Changed
That's
my
amazing.
Life.
That's amazing.
And from that moment on, I was like open-minded to not never drinking again, but to like taking a break, like taking a pause from alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that's when kind of,
That's so powerful. That's so incredible. Right?
Like
that
fact
moment
that I was
of
able
just
to
breaking
see him,
yourself open and
like right around the holidays, saw him the same day. It was just like truly a blessing.
Yeah.
And then what happened? Yeah. So I was open-minded. I wasn't like 100% bought in either. Eh? I was way closer than ever, but I wasn't like 100% I'm going to be sober. I was still had a lot of hesitancy. So my next session, I had another follow-up session. He says, okay, Luke, I'm going to put you into CAMH, Center for Addiction Mental Health. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Ron Green Street.
Yeah.
He's like, Luke, you're going to go there. I'm putting you in with group sessions. It's going to be great. Okay, perfect. So he puts me in. I guess the people in the group were more advanced with drugs than like alcohol, but it was also drugs, right? So it was an advanced group. Mm-hmm. So I go, whatever, a few days later, I go to this session at CAMH. I drive my car, right? I show up, come from like it's during lunch. So I'm wearing like, you know, business clothes. I sit in there and then whatever, 10 to 15 minutes in, they start asking about like best practices. What are we doing to like feel good about what we're doing, right? It's not hard. It's not easy, but what's a best practice? What are you doing? So I stood up. I was one of the first, I think I was the first guy, second person to talk. And I was like, hey, I had just downloaded this app and I like to keep track of the days that I haven't had a drink. And at that time it was like, whatever it was, 3, 4, 5 days. It's like, I like keeping track of the hours. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And everyone in the room looked at me and they were like, you have a phone. Like you have a phone. I was like, yeah, I have a phone. And then I kind of just sunk in. Like I was like looking around. I was like, holy shit. I had a phone. Like, and I was like, oh my God. It was such a big eye-opening moment for me because for me, I guess for the first time, it was like, I'm not invincible on this fucking thing. Just because I've been able to somewhat hold it together from the outside doesn't mean that I can't fucking become like everyone in this room. It was a moment for me where I was like, this can be you, Luke, if you don't fucking change your course, because I knew the shit I was doing, being away for 48 hours, random places, really scary shit. I was like, this is going to be me.
Yeah.
If you don't fucking get your act together. And it was and it was just enough for me to see it. And then from that moment on, I had just decided I was just not going to drink. I knew in my heart that alcohol wasn't good for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were like making a comment earlier about the simplicity of saying it was complicating my life. The simplicity of what I say to myself now is that I'm allergic to alcohol.
Fair.
Like I'm allergic. If I was allergic to peanut butter, fair. Right? If I was allergic to peanut butter, would I put a bit of peanut butter in the morning? Yeah, just a little bit. You know, it's not that bad. I'll just put it on a small piece of my banana in the morning. Like, no, I'd be like, fuck no, I cannot touch that shit. I'm just
going to kill me.
And fucking shit, right?
It'll kill me.
So from that moment on, that's when the journey, that's my journey. But here's the interesting thing, Kendra. Not a lot of people know this, is that I was sober for 5 years, okay? Five years. And nobody knew. I mean, other than close friends, none of my colleagues knew I was sober. I just would make a lot of good excuses why I wasn't drinking. I just wouldn't show up to a lot of places. I was embarrassed
of
the fact that I was sober. I was in a sober closet. I was just like, I don't want to identify as sobriety, as sober, because I was ashamed of myself. I was like, Luke, you're sober. You're a man. You're sober. You're weak. You can't drink with the boys. There's something wrong with you. You're a loser. That's how I felt. I felt like a loser.
Yeah.
I was sober. I was a loser.
Yeah. It's one of those labels. It's one of those labels that it's like sobriety comes with the implication that you're not perfect. It comes with the implication that you're not invincible. And it's one thing when you get to that realization yourself, it's a whole other thing having to admit that to the world or choosing to.
Yeah. And I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want anyone to know.
Yeah.
I was like this. No, like I would make excuses. I never told anybody, hey, I'm coming up on 5 years sober. Never.
Yeah.
And then another thing, pivotal moment. There's a few pivotal moments that happened for me.
I want to know them all.
Part of the reason why I'm so excited to talk to you and just love sharing my story, I've been doing it for 2 years now, is that I want people to realize that you don't need to wait X amount of days, years to like make true change, eh?
No, true change. Not at all. Yeah.
Like you can do that right away. So that's a huge motivator for me to share this. So while I was sober for 5 years and in the sober closet, never talked about it, I also got into running. I picked up running on my journey.
Okay.
And I went all in. Like everything I do in life, it's either 0 or 100.
All or nothing.
All or nothing,
like,
right?
I feel like that might be telling of some of us folk.
Yeah, exactly. So all or nothing. Picked up running 2019, did 10K, did a half marathon that year. Then I got a running coach, trained for marathon, running, COVID, run. Races are canceled. I went all in. I ended up with this goal. I was like, I want to qualify for the Boston Marathon, right? I hated running my entire life. Now all of a sudden I'm a runner. I qualify for the Boston Marathon, my first marathon. Georgina.
Incredible.
It was an inaugural marathon, qualify for Boston. I was like,
incredible.
Fuck yeah, Luke. Be fucking proud of yourself. And at that time, I was just coming up on my 5-year anniversary. So it's like, Luke, hang on a second. You've been sober for almost 5 years and now you just qualify for this huge race. Like, be proud of yourself. Hello, this is a good thing, Luke.
And
I was like, I actually am starting to feel proud of myself. And I was like, you know what? I actually want to let people know what I've been up to for the past 5 years. Like truly what I've been doing, what I've been working on.
Yeah.
And I was like, how am I going to do that? My Instagram is private. My Facebook, private, very much private. Everything was private. Nobody knew, right? But then I was like, you know what's not what I can do that's not private is LinkedIn.
Yeah, okay.
So at the time, I worked for a large global tech company. One of the biggest tech companies in the world.
Because I've looked at your LinkedIn, I already know the answer, but I won't say it.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? I need to let my boss knew. We were really tight, but that's different. But like, you know, friends of like my colleagues, other leaders, you know, I needed to let them know. I was ready to let them know. So I was like, how am I going to do this? I did it on LinkedIn. I made a post, scared shitless, by the way, back and forth in my head. Am I actually going to do this? And I shared a picture of my daughter sitting on my lap that my wife did a sign for me that said, I'm 5 years sober. And then I shared a picture of my Boston qualifier. So it was like basically two pictures and I wrote like three paragraphs, nothing long, you know, hey, you know, I made some changes. I forget exactly what I said, but I posted about, hey, I've been sober for 5 years. And I was scared shitless, but I didn't really think too much of it. It was around, like it was late at night that I posted it.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up the next morning and my phone is just blowing up. Like I'm getting email or DM messages on LinkedIn from like old teachers, high school teachers. I'm getting like people I don't know, old friends, like just everybody. And I was like, holy shit. There's something here because people either related personally or through because of a friend, or they just wanted to say congrats, right? Yeah. There was just a lot of like support I felt. And that was another huge moment for me because in that whole process of being proud and just owning my story, that's when my identity changed. I went from like this like life of the party, you know, guy who's like trying not to drink, but to now like the person who I don't drink. I'm sober actually. And, and I clearly had a lot of pride in those identities. And then from that moment on, everything changed because I was just proud and it just felt so liberating to let people in. And I didn't have the shame anymore. I didn't feel like I was a loser because I was sober. I was proud. I was like, this is actually a really fucking good thing. Good for you. And now it's like, I want to let people know that, you know, it's not sober is the answer. My wife drinks alcohol. I've made a lot of sober friends recently. I'd say 80% of my friends drink alcohol. You know, it's not for everyone, but for me, it's the best thing. I cannot mix with alcohol. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
And I was like ready to start sharing, and I created an Instagram account in 2022, January, right around the time I made the post. And I just really wanted to double down on the fact that you don't need to make your life any more complicated to reflect on or to revisit your relationship with alcohol. Because here's the thing, I was fooled with the fact that because I didn't necessarily look like I struggled from the outside with alcohol, that everything was okay.
Yeah.
But that's so far from the truth. So that I was like, I want to share my story because I'm sure there's a couple people that can relate maybe to what I've been going through.
A couple million.
And I don't want people to wait, you know, oh, I got to be sober for 5 years before I could do this or whatever, you know, be proud of myself and just look at myself in the mirror and say, hey, look, I don't have it all figured out, but I'm showing up for myself and I should feel good.
I think there's so much around that piece on identity. And I think that that's so key because I think that we have these measures that we use to identify ourselves that make us feel that pride and give us that sense of accomplishment that we feel comfortable showing up as. And I know for me, it started as a, you know, a Team Canada level goalie. I mean, like that was rock star. I loved being that goalie, you know, that was such an easy identity. And then when I got sick, exactly the same as you. I mean, nobody knew I was dealing with mental illness for the first 10 years I was dealing with it. And I wouldn't have had it any other way. I felt pathetic. I didn't want people to know. And it took watching the death of a young girl to really make me understand, like, this is not okay. Like, I'm part of the reason that people don't know there's help out there. I'm part of the secret. And I don't want to be part of the secret. And then I started speaking and it was another label that I put on myself, this kind of advocacy label, this like person that I could be really proud of. And for a while there, that almost became negligent as well because of what we were talking about earlier, that sense of feeling like now I have to be perfect in my advocacy. I have to be perfect at mental health. I have to be perfect at being sober. I have to be perfect in every community that I represent. And I realized again that hanging on to that sense of identity that came with that was so detrimental. And I still struggle with it. I'm coming into it, you know, with other aspects of my life that I can't talk about yet. But it's, you know, I've just had these moments where truly identifying what matters to me and the person that I am has become less and less about the identity that other people see in me. And it's become a lot more about just being true to what makes me feel like the best version of myself. And, you know, there's a lot of cycles, I think, there where you have to learn again to be proud of yourself. And I'm in one. And it's, you know, it's just so, I appreciate you so much for sharing your story and your journey. And like, the truth behind it is, you know, it's so complicated. Whether you want complexity in your life or not, it is a complicated journey. And the complexity of it is, it's huge. And, you know, for you to make that step, people don't truly understand necessarily how much goes into actually hitting enter when you're ready to make that post, when you're ready to just come clean. And as positive as it can be for you, it comes with a lot of work. So I applaud you. I'm so proud of you. I am like, I'm so grateful to be meeting you right now. And I'm happy to bring down that like sober average for your friend group. I'm good with that too. I think you're at like 79% now.
Yeah.
but going back, I mean, in terms of your journey in sobriety, so 5 years, that's incredible. One day is incredible. I mean, I don't want to downplay it at all. One day of sobriety is an achievement. And to anybody out there listening to this, to make a change in your life for the better, to bring yourself from an unmanageable life into a place where you feel true to yourself and are stopping that reliance on external factors to find your own happiness. Kudos. I mean, it's a hell of an adventure. But what are the things that have helped you to maintain that? Because you've mentioned first therapist, I'm sure a wonderful person, maybe not the right one to get to you at the level you needed to get to. Second therapist, I love him dearly. Mystery therapist on Bloor Street, well done for sitting and holding space for somebody who took the initiative to go in and break themselves open. Because at the end of the day, therapists are only as good as the work we put in with them. I mean, you don't 100%. Go to a therapist to be fixed. You go to a therapist to explore and learn yourself and be true or not. And you get it. You get out what you put in.
100%.
Then a group at CAMH, fantastic. Great, you know, facility, amazing programs. What else has supported you? Have you done ongoing programs? Are you comfortable saying, is this something that you actively, or is this something you do on your own?
Yep. So my maintenance now looks like the, it's with the community that I'm building and that I've built and the people around me who lift me up.
Amazing.
And that's what keeps me going.
Yeah.
During this whole process, I discovered that I actually really enjoy kind of connecting with others, hearing about their story, you know, helping maybe inspire or guide or just be a sounding board. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. So I was like, you know what? Why don't we look at something like life coaching?
Amazing.
So I got my life coaching certification.
Where did you get that?
I got that out of BC.
Incredible. Online.
And it was fantastic. And then I kind of leveraged my, you know, experience with my lived experience with alcohol and struggle. And so I started a, you know, alcohol-free life coaching business.
Amazing.
That's what I've been doing. It's been fantastic. I'm meeting people all over Canada, all over the US, Europe. So I do group coaching. And I do also one-on-one coaching.
Yeah.
So I know there's probably something to be said, like similar to what you were sharing earlier about really, you know, that's great you're doing for others, but there's probably an element of like, what is it, you know, also for me. But here's the thing that I'll say is that in our groups that we have, I take the opportunity because it's not the Luke show. It's not like Luke's the expert. Hey, everyone, let's listen to Luke. He's going to share for an hour. We're all going to be better. That's not the vibe.
Yeah.
I take the opportunity to also truly share what's going on in my life.
Amazing.
Like we're in this together. It's not, like I said, it's not about me. So in those sessions, I truly feel like I do a lot of deep reflection on what's going on in my life, all aspects, like, you know, sobriety is one piece, like we talked about family, you know, other goals that I have or whatever the case is. And I come out of those meetings always feeling better than I did when I joined.
Yeah.
And until that changes, I'll continue to do that. So there's that. There's the online community that I'm building together, you know, in coaching. But then there's also another thing that I've done. It's been exactly a year now. Is I've been really focusing on like the running community in Toronto mostly because that's where I live, but also virtually where I started a run club called the Sober Striders.
Amazing.
And we run, you know, once a week. It's not like an elite running club. Like actually running is probably the least important part of our run club. We're actually more of a social club disguised as a run club. And it's an opportunity for people to connect and meet other cool badasses in person. Run, we have a walk option. It's a 5K run or a 2K walk. So even if you hate running, you can come walk. And then we end up at a alcohol-free bottle shop called Bevy's, which has become a friend of mine. We go there, we hang out. We go to, you know, Healthy Planet has been very much invested in the community and wants to support me in what I'm doing. So they host us a lot. And it's just about bringing people together.
Amazing.
And what I love most about that is that, like I said, I feel like we're introducing people to running. It's not for everybody, but it's like I'm seeing more and more people joining our runs who hated running and are just coming to try something different. You know, they want to meet other, you know, similar goal oriented or whatever it is, people with similar goals. And to do that in person is incredible. Like online is great. Amazing. Don't get me wrong. I love my online community. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, I've met a lot of them through different travels and that'll continue to evolve. But like the in-person community of like meeting the, you know, people face to face and just being like these connections is it fills my cup. 1000%.
You know what's coming next, right? Do you know what's coming next? When? Where do I have to go?
Yeah.
Where do I get to come running?
You come anytime, Kendra.
Yeah.
Anytime.
I need the details because you know what? I'm in that place right now where I'm going to give myself over to the fact that I need support too. And no, so I would happily join
you'll
in.
You'll make some awesome friends because it's really, really good people. Our next run is actually on November 30th. A few people on the team, actually there's 10 people on our club who just ran to Montreal. Like they rented an RV and they actually took turns running.
That's incredible.
Anyways, so we're doing a Movember awareness, you know, men's mental health on November 30th. We're meeting at the headquarters, Movember's headquarters downtown. And on Saturday, November 30th, and we're going to go for a run. And then there's going to be, you know, a few people talking. It's just going to be a nice community, fun thing. So if you're around,
I'm in.
Kendra.
It's my mom's birthday, but I know that my mom for her birthday would love nothing more than to see me getting back on my feet. So I'm in.
What about bring your mom?
You know what? I'll check it out. We're going through it on this end as well. We just lost my father just about 6 months ago. So we're taking it a day at a time. So I feel
for you. I lost my dad in 24. It's been 10 years since my dad passed.
Tell me it gets easier. Just lie to me. Just today, just lie to me. I'm fine with it. I'm really sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. And he never saw me get sober. Never saw me get married. Never saw me have my daughter. You know, he missed my brother, same thing. So it's tough, you know. But our dads are looking at, they're actually enjoying this conversation right now.
Of course
they are. They're looking down at us and they're like,
my father was my best friend and I don't think there's a day in his life that I didn't know that. So I'm, whew, okay.
He's with you, Kendra. No doubt about
every
that.
Every second.
He's with
every
you.
Every second or I wouldn't be standing.
He's proud
still.
Of you. He's big time proud of you.
I appreciate you. Just for self-preservation, I'm going to move on. We don't need to make this that show. and I don't know what we're going to move on to. Maybe the weather. No. No, I appreciate you, friend. And I will absolutely, like you, running and physicality is something that has been huge for me and my recovery in, you know, every part of my life. And it's also one of those things that I've had to be careful that I'm quick to realize that I love to rely on physical activity to not feel as much as I do to feel. So it's this precarious balance where it's like, okay, I know I need to do this. I know I need to incorporate this in my wellness, but I also need to be aware of the fact that I don't need to run 10K a day to prove anything to myself and that I need to use it as a benefit, not as a mask. And I love the humbling moments where I get to sit here and pull myself apart. And I say that very sarcastically, but I am certainly pulling apart right now and realizing that, you know, there's everything can be, everything be used as good and it can be used as an excuse. And I'm finding the perfect balance right now. And I'm in search of, certainly haven't yet, but I'm getting there, but I would love to do more in the space of running with you, because I think that feels intentional to me. I think it feels intentional to associate running with connection and community and support and things that I am lacking.
That's right.
And so it's, I'd really love that.
Yep. Absolutely.
So you're going to become a running buddy as long as you promise not to do, like, how fast do you run 5K?
It depends.
No, be honest. Tell me. I got to know.
Well,
you qualified for the Boston Marathon. I want I want to know the fast time. I just want to hear it so I can be impressed.
Here's the thing. Running is everyone talks about the speed, but you want to become a good runner.
Yeah.
Is you need to run slow.
Okay.
So, you know, it sounds totally contradictory, especially as a hockey player like you.
Yeah.
Like I played.
I want to go hard.
Like, we want to go hard. We want yeah. okay, like it's a shift. It's a game. It's game time. Yep. Let's go as hard as we can. And that's yep. the, like right. I'm sure you're the same in the gym. Okay, let's feel the pain.
Let's burn out. Let's go for yep.
it. Running's the opposite.
Okay,
and I learned that the hard way. Running mm. is about you know, one, consistency, and mm-hmm. it's about showing up, but it's about keeping, you know, a steady, slow pace. It's crazy. Okay. You want to become fast, go slow. Yeah, you have specific workouts, which okay. you do go all out, but it's very yeah. prescribed, and it's for a certain distance. So it's either 400 meter repeats, 800 meter, 1 kilometer repeats, you know, stuff like okay. that. But it's like, if you're just, if I'm putting my shoes on, I'm going for a run, I go slow. I go slow.
So, I like it. Right? I like it.
But when it's time to throw down, I'm ready to throw down. And when it's a race, you know,
yeah.
you're obviously throwing down.
You're there to race.
You're in a race, right? So
yeah,
it's hard to go slow. I'll say that.
I like
especially
it.
As an athlete like you.
You know what,
it's
though?
It's hard to go slow.
No, but I love that so much because I think that that's such a brilliant point. And I think actually probably the greatest way we could possibly wrap this up is the notion of it's better to go slow, because it's so true of everything in life. If we are always racing to the max, if we are trying to function to prove that we're okay, we will forever fall back and we will forever burn out. And I think that it's the long game, right? It's the ability to learn all of the really uncomfortable, hard little things and do them consistently every day that makes the long game so much easier and achievable. Yeah. You don't make the Boston Marathon if you don't learn how to take it a step at a time.
That's right. Is exactly it. Well said. Consistency. What I like to say is consistency over intensity. Like, it's better to show up, I call it, you know, a 5 out of 10 effort than it is to show up, you know, once or twice a week at a 9 or a 10 out of 10 effort. Because what happens is you end up, with burnout, but you end up like fearing the thing. It's like, oh, I got to go for a run again. This is going to be a pain the entire time. I don't want to do that. Like, this sucks.
No.
But it's like when you're doing it right, it's like, okay, it's actually going to be pretty chill. It's actually going to be pretty chill.
I love it. So, and that's where we find peace, right? Is learning to find the chill in the hard things.
And to put the damn shoes on or get out the front door or just show up to the thing, whatever the thing is,
it.
A meeting, going out the door, meeting a friend, going to a new group run where you don't know anybody and it's a little scary and there's a voice inside of you that says, you know what? Maybe I can make an excuse why I don't go today. But to mm-hmm. show up, to go there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll guarantee you 9.9 out of 10 times you go to those things, you're going to be happy you went. You're going to come back and you're going to feel better than you felt going. And
yeah.
That's it. Just show up.
Look, I love it. I love it. Showing up is what I preach and what I practice. And I don't always do it well, but I will do it imperfectly every single time somebody lets me.
Before we wrap here, I have to say this. My daughter's into hockey. Okay.
Okay.
She's 5. So yeah. She's playing house league, but U8. She's playing with
girls
twice, you know, 2 ages older than her. She's
I love
like
it.
Me. She loves hockey. So I can't wait to tell her that we were chatting. I'll show her some pictures of you. And
well, bring her out November 30th.
Bring her November 30th. She'd love to take some pictures with you and stuff like that. Because
I'd love to.
It's so like the hockey program. So she plays at Leaside Wildcats.
Okay,
it's,
Wildcats.
It's like,
yeah,
it's like top notch. Like, I'm so impressed.
Yeah.
And there's so many female hockey players because of people just like you, Kendra. Just like you and what you're doing.
It's funny, right? Like, you try to find pride in being one of the pioneers, and then you try not to create the synonym of like old. But you know what?
Experienced, Kendra.
There's that piece when the PWHL hit, and every older hockey player that just had that little tinge of shit. If it wasn't just 10 years ago, I would have loved this.
Oh,
I would have loved to have been a part of this. But you know what? So much pride in being able to be part of a group of women who are part of the reason that is in existence now.
1,000%. That doesn't happen with people like you, Kendra. That doesn't happen.
How incredible. It's so amazing. I appreciate that. I do appreciate that. And you know what? It's so cool watching the game and how it's changing and how it's growing. And the girls in it and the girls running it are just phenomenal people. I know a lot of them. And
so cool.
Yeah. Look forward to meeting your daughter.
So I got to show pictures. I'm going to pick her up from school tonight.
I love it.
See you on the 30th. I'm looking forward to that.
I love it so much. Okay. Excellent. Well, we will be in touch offline, my friend. I appreciate you so much for having this conversation with me.
And thank you.
Thank you for holding space. Cause little fact I learned about myself in therapy today, how does it take 45 years to learn this about yourself? I am scared to ask for what I need because I am fearful of letting other people down. And I needed that therapy appointment this morning. And I was scared to reach out to you and ask if I could push it because I was scared you'd be like, screw it. I'm not doing the podcast then. So no, you know what?
Not at all.
Thank you for being proof that it's okay to ask for what I need.
I'm glad.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Luke. Have an incredible day and say hi to your daughter for me.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us on another episode of Speakeasy, where we believe conversations are meant to be had out loud. Share this episode to help others find our show, and don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join me at kfisher30 on Instagram as I travel across Canada and the US tackling the current mental health crisis with colleges and universities.